Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and joining me, of course, is one of the hardest-working ladies in the golf business, LPGA professional Cindy Miller. Cindy, welcome back to Women of Golf.
Good morning, Ted. It's nice to be here. How are you?
I'm doing well, Cindy. Here we are in another month. It's hard to believe. I don't know where this year's going, but we're already in the month of June, and it just seems the dates are slipping. The dates are slipping by. Cindy, of course, has managed to make her way over to Philadelphia. Cindy, what are you doing in Philadelphia this lovely Tuesday morning?
Well, I am in Philadelphia for the ACE Group Women's National Leadership Conference. So ACE Insurance, I'm at the ACE Club in Philadelphia, where we
right.
will be helping 75 women learn how to play golf and use it as a business tool, and then tonight we're doing a workshop called Improve Your Team from the Inside Out.
Wow, fantastic. 75 rather, more great ladies coming into the game and going to use that as a business tool. What a fantastic thing. And Cindy, you're hopping all over the place. Last weekend, of course, this past weekend that just went by, of course, you were at the Jim Kelly Charity Golf Classic. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later, but you've obviously known Jim Kelly for a while, and he's a great former, retired now, of course, NFL football player for the Buffalo Bills.
Yes, he is. He is. He's a great ambassador to help children. I was with lots of fun football stars, Andre Reed and C.J. Spiller and Reuben Brown, but we can talk about that a little later.
Yep. Yeah, we'll do that. We got a great part four of Cindy's series, Own Your Game. We're going to get into that in just a minute here, but let me just remind everybody, Cindy, real quick, that we are live every Tuesday morning here at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on blogtalkradio.com, and all you need to do is just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/, and you can either type in Women of Golf, it'll take you right to the link, or if you're surfing around there, and you can just go up into the search key and type in Women of Golf, and that will also bring you there. Or as I said, we're live on Blog Talk Radio right now, and if you want to speak or call in during the live broadcast and talk with Cindy and I or any of the guests that we have on throughout the weeks, you can do so by calling area code 347-945-5855. And at any time, you can also email questions into the program or comments if you want, or maybe there's somebody that's in the golf business that you want to, maybe you'd like to hear as a guest on here. You can certainly let us know, and we'll search them out and do our best to get them on here. But you can do that at womenofgolf@gmail.com. And, of course, Cindy, as I said, we've been doing for the last few weeks a really great series that she's put together called Own Your Game, and we've been going through the first three parts of it, and we're into part four already, and I'm really excited because I think this is really kind of getting to some of the meat and potatoes of Own Your Game here, and we're going to talk about that here in just a second. And as Cindy mentioned a little bit later on, we're going to talk a little bit about her time at the 28th Annual Jim Kelly Celebrity Classic, which benefits, of course, the Kelly for Kids Foundation. We'll talk a little bit about that just before we close out the show. But anyway, Cindy, let's get right into Own Your Game, Part 4. And this one starts out really talking about the left and right parts of the brain and what sort of function. Let me just read this out, Cindy, and then I'll get you to expand a little bit more. Balance is, of course, very important in the game of golf. It requires mathematical skills, club distance knowledge, temperature and wind control, as well as how to figure out the playable yardages of a shot. When you're calculating all these measurements, your left brain, of course, is doing the work here. And once you have done your calculations, the right brain needs to visualize the shot you have chosen, and it does the work in executing the shot. If you have trouble transferring either from the left to the right brain, you'll have challenges on the course. And here's, of course, we're going to get into a list of what her process is as she gets ready to play a shot. So, Cindy, talk a little bit more about the importance of the connection between the left and right brain.
Well, it's very important, and I think that sometimes my students or golfers in general stay on either the left or the right brain, and they don't have the balance needed to perform the shot correctly, and therefore they mess up the shot. Example being, when we go do our boot camps, a lot of times people are very unaware of the fact that the temperature, it, say if it's 40 or 50 degrees outside, the temperature is going to affect the flight of the golf ball. And
right.
Another example might be the yardage. We can walk up to a yardage marker if you don't have a distance, you know, laser, and see that you're at the 150-yard marker, and they think it's 150 yards to the hole, when in fact
yep.
the pin might be at the back of the green.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not aware that they need to add yardage to get to the pin.
Right.
They're not aware that it might be uphill. It might, if it's 150 and the pin's back, it's now 160. Now if you're if you're uphill, it can be 170. And then if you're against the wind, it can be 185, even though you're at the 150 marker.
Right.
So
right.
then and they might take the wrong club.
Right. And a lot of, I think a lot of people fall into that trap. And so really, essentially what you're saying is the left side of our brain sort of does all the calculations and gets everything ready, and the right brain sort of takes over at that point, or should take over, and executes processes and executes the shot that we need to play some better golf, correct?
Yes, and I don't think that casual weekend golfers, again, I'm not putting everybody in this pile, but if you wanted to really own your game and get better at golf, you need to embrace what you might be missing. And again, I've never met anyone who tried to miss it on purpose, so we know you're not trying to screw this up, but where could you be missing something? And that's why I wanted to have this segment in, because I think it's very important to make people aware that the raw yardage isn't always the raw yardage. Now, once you get the raw yardage, you also need to know how far you hit the clubs. So as we discussed last week, you need to practice enough to know how far you fly the ball with each club, and maybe make
right.
a chart up for yourself. Example being, yesterday there was a par 3 at the tournament that was 173. Well, the wind was howling against us. Well, that 173 was playing 195.
Yeah.
So the guys I was playing with, oh, well, I'll just use it. I said, it's not enough club. You know, you got to go up more. No. And these guys can hit the ball 280 yards. So, again, I just smiled as they hit the right club, and they said, whoa, you're right. And I said, well, yeah, because I've done this enough to realize I've made the mistake, I guess we could say. So once we've
right.
made the mistake, some people aren't very good at judging what their shot does either. So sometimes they say, oh, well, I just hit that too hard. No, you hit it thin. You almost topped it. And that's why it went too far.
Right. And you know, I think, and just to sort of clarify, because, you know, I don't want any of the listeners to, you know, to get confused by this and think that it's some great complicating, you know, that you have to be a mathematical genius in order to do what we're talking about. Really what we're saying is that your brain has to engage. Anything that you do, whether it's golf or any other activity, has to somehow become engaged. And in golf, what we're really saying here is that there's a specific function that your brain does. I mean, obviously your brain doesn't hit the shot, your body does, but your brain sets up the wheels in motion, if you will. And if you understand what it is that we're trying to explain here, and we're going to certainly do our best to do that, it's going to become much easier to execute the shots that you're going to want to hit. But the key thing is, and you hit it right on the head here just a second ago, Cindy, is what we talked about last week, is you've got to practice. You know, this isn't just going to come naturally. You have to get out there and practice and sort of and essentially own your game. And the best way to do that is go out in the practice tee or work with a teacher professional that can help you sort some of these things out. And it's actually very simple once you have the tools and the knowledge But we're going to talk about that as well. But Cindy, let's talk about some of the calculations here and some of the things that we're going to do. And I'm just going to read out a few, and then we're going to go back and sort of break them down. Obviously, we need to inspect the options, understand what it is that we're facing. You mentioned yardage and wind, temperature, what's the lie, that sort of thing. And then you have one here which has kind of piqued my interest, acknowledge stupid, avoid it. We're going to talk about that in a second. But let's start with the first couple here first. Talk about inspecting the options. How do we weigh out the options?
Well, I'm going to back up for 1 second just to make the
sure.
listeners be not confuse the listeners. So there's three parts to this: the calculations, your pre-shot routine, and your swing or the shot. So there's three parts when you get ready to hit any golf shot. And the first mm-hmm. is calculation, second is pre-shot routine, and third is swing or shot execution. So inspecting the options when you walk up to a shot, it's a new opportunity or challenge. That's what you get to do for 18 holes. Each shot is a challenge.
Right.
So you look and say, okay, what do we got here? Well, we've got 92 yards to the pin. You know, we've got a bunker in front. We've got a green that's hard. You know, okay, well, what's it going to play like? And that goes into second step here is what's the yardage? It's 93, or I think I said 93 yards to the pin.
Yeah.
Well, if the bunker's in front, how far is it from the front of the green to the pin?
Yeah.
Because if it's only 5 yards, then the pin yardage is not going to matter. Okay, so let's put that in the back mm-hmm. of our heads. So let's say the wind's in front of us. Well, how much is the wind blowing? Every 10 miles an hour is a club. So let's say it's blowing 10. So now we've got 103 to the pin. And
right.
it's 75 degrees, so the temperature's not going to matter, and we've got a great lie. Okay? So now we've got mm-hmm. 103 to the pin. Now, acknowledge stupid. What does that mean? Well, in all my time of trying to improve myself, what I've learned is that your brain does not hear a negative. So when you say to yourself, don't hit it in the bunker, you jerk, your brain hears, hit it in the bunker, you jerk.
Yeah.
So we don't want to give your brain or the control tower any power over what you're going to do. We don't want to program it to do something stupid. So we would look at this shot and your options and say, okay, the bunker's in the front of the green, 5 yards past the bunker to the pin. So stupid would hit it in the bunker. And so we're going to avoid the bunker at all costs. But we
right.
don't give any power over us, if you will. So we now say to ourselves, I'm not sure that I can hit this shot 103 yards perfectly every time. And mm-hmm. I realize that she who misses it best without getting kicked off wins. So I am now playing this shot as if it's 115 yards.
Right.
Because I can hit this shot far and be fine. I don't need to hit it perfect. Because if I miss my perfect plan, I'm buried
yep.
in the lip of the bunker. So
mm-hmm.
that would be stupid.
Right.
Which would go, so again, the options are we've got a shot, flat lie, not uphill. It's up 93 yards. The wind's blowing 10 miles an hour in our face. It's playing 103 to the pin. It's 75 degrees. I've got a great lie. Stupid is short. I'm playing this now. The 103 yards is like 115 to 120.
Right.
So then you choose, the next step is choose your shot that you have a 50-50% chance of pulling it off.
Right.
Well, what does that mean? You know, if you hit your 7 iron 112 and you mm-hmm. hit your 6 125, then you need to leave room in making the decision of what club to choose. You need to say, you know what, I'm not going to hit this 7-iron perfect all the time. I'm going to hit my 6, because if I miss my 6, I'm right by the hole.
Yeah.
If I hit my 6 good, I've got a 30-footer. So So that's how you choose your shot correctly. So we went from 103 yards or 93 yards to the pin to taking a club that goes 125 so that we can be by the hole.
Right.
And I don't think anybody ever does that.
No, and that's the thing. You know, you often hear one of the biggest criticisms I hear, in a lot of the pro-ams from the professionals, they're saying that a lot of the amateurs don't pick enough club. And just like you were indicating a little earlier with the gentleman that you were playing with, this past weekend, when they were faced with a situation, they didn't think they needed more club. But once you sort of explained it to them and they made their selection, they obviously recognized that you were right. Cindy, I want to ask you one thing here. You and I understand this a little bit better than most, but for the sort of the average golfer out there that doesn't understand, how does temperature affect that decision? If ever all the other factors are aligned, maybe you can just very quickly explain how a big change in temperature can affect some of that decision.
Well, the hotter it is, the farther the ball goes, and scientifically, I have no idea why. I just know that that's a fact because of all my experience. Maybe you know why, but I can tell you that if it's cold, the ball does not carry as far because it doesn't compress as much, and therefore you have to take more club. In the spring in Buffalo, I can tell you that, you know, you come out from hibernation and you go to play golf and you think, holy cow, I just lost 30 yards in the winter because I'm so much older now. And it's really not the fact that you're old and you can't hit the ball anywhere. It's just the fact that it's so much colder and it just doesn't travel as far.
Right. Yeah. Let me just expand a little bit on that as well. Obviously, I don't know all the scientific facts about it either, but Cindy's exactly right on that. And I know from living up north in the past, that very same scenario coming out of winter hibernation and losing quite a bit of yards. And I couldn't understand, you know, especially at the close of the season, the previous season, I was hitting it so great and getting some great distance. And all of a sudden, 20, 30 yards later, I'm scratching my head saying, what happened between, you know, September, October of last year and, April, May of this year? What happened to the yardage? But that's right. The temperature does. And the reason why I said I want to make sure people understand this, you know, Cindy's scenario, she talked about, you know, around 75 degrees. You know, obviously if it's 80 degrees or 70 degrees, you're not going to notice a difference. But if you were playing, let's say, a 20 or 30 degree difference, you may notice, especially if it's a cooler temperature, you're going to certainly notice more difference. If it's, you know, 80, 85 degrees, again, you may not see a lot of difference in what the ball does. But certainly if it's in a colder climate, you are certainly going to lose some distance on that because the ball does not compress as well in a colder climate. So that's something to consider for you playing up in the Northeast, particularly right now where it's still coming out of a winter thaw. You're going to lose a little bit of yardage, but as the season progresses, you're going to gain some of that back. But I just wanted to point that out, Cindy, because I don't think a lot of people, especially some of the high handicap amateurs and that, don't really understand how temperature can affect the ball flight.
Well, the other thing that can affect it is altitude.
Right. Yeah, and altitude as well. Obviously, that's why a lot of times when you hear the pros playing out in the desert down in, over in Phoenix or in Vegas, that area, a lot of times you'll hear them talk about that as well, especially when they get up into higher elevations, that's going to affect it as well. As it does your breathing changes as well when you're at a higher elevation. So there's a lot of factors here in calculating. That's, of course, where the left brain comes in, right?
Correct. So
all
once
right, so
you do your calculations and you inspect your options, you get the yardage, the wind, you acknowledge stupid, you choose, you know, do I have a 50-50% chance at, pulling the shot off, you pick your club. Once you pick your club, you then would go into the next stage or process, which is your pre-shot routine. So you walk behind the ball. If you watch tour players, each tour player has their own individual pre-shot routine. When Alan played on tour, I could spot players from three holes away just from their mannerisms and how they walk into the ball. I may not be able to see the person, but I would know who the player was just by their pre-shot routine. So once you walk behind the ball, you're probably going to visualize the shot, which now we're starting to pull in our right brain to create the shot rather than our left brain mm-hmm. getting all the numbers. You walk behind the ball, I waggle the club. I'm trying to feel. So again, a visualization and a feel is more right brain than left brain. Left brain is more thinking rather than feeling mm-hmm. and visualizing. So I'll walk behind the ball, I'll visualize my shot, I'll waggle the club a few times just to feel, and then I pick out an intermediate target with where I want the ball to start. Now, when you walk into the ball, it's really important. A lot of people aim incorrectly. They aim their body at the target. I'll see people on the range put a club over their shoulders or their hips or across their middle. And they'll aim themselves at the target. Well, what they don't realize is then the ball will be parallel to the right of where they're aiming. So you never want to aim your body at the target. You always want to aim your face at the target. If you do that and you aim your body at the target, what's going to happen is your subconscious mind will be very aware of what you're doing, and it will help you and teach you how to yank or pull the ball back online.
Yep.
So you'll really be in denial and not have the ability to aim straight and hit it straight. It's amazing what your subconscious mind will do to help you. So a lot of times the students come in with that issue, I will say, do you really want to open up this can of worms? Because if I teach you to aim straight, you're then going to hit all the balls left until you learn how to hit it straight from aiming straight. That, again, would be another show, but I just want people to be very aware that you have to aim the club face where you want the ball to start.
Right.
I set the face down being very open to the target. Because I'm right eye dominant, I need to be able to be open so my right eye, because I play right-handed and I'm right eye dominant, so my right eye sees what's going on. And again, this is all a visualization and a feel, and it's all right brain. I have a specific feeling that I want to get to know how far away I am from the ball. The top of my left arm is sitting on the side of my chest. My hands are under my chin. And then, you know, I would walk up, set the face down, put my feet down, make sure that I'm the right distance from the ball, and then I look up and I visualize the shot, and then I have a very, my third part in this process to produce a shot is your swing. So
mm-hmm.
I'll back it up, pre-shot routine, walk behind the ball, I waggle the club, I'm feeling, I'm visualizing. Pick out an intermediate target, walk into the ball open, set the club face down, then I aim my feet or my face, you know, that I aim the club face. I figure out and make sure that my stance is right, my grip is right. I look up one more time just to check. If I'm not sure where I'm going, and if it doesn't feel right, and I hear my left brain screaming at me, look out, this is wrong. And that's what your left brain sounds like. He's your protector. And again, the first thing we do at boot camp is name that witch. And the witch for me is Cynthia, and she's my protector. If I hear that voice, I stop for a second. I take my right hand off the club, and I pretend I'm throwing a ball underhanded towards the target. And that's my checkpoint to quiet Cynthia. To say, okay, wait, I can really toss the ball underhanded towards the target. I'm aimed fine. Just relax, Cynthia. Everything's okay. And then I can take a little breath, and then I swing.
Right. And let me just emphasize on the pre-shot routine a little bit. I mean, you've put all the components there together perfectly. I think one of the biggest problems for most amateurs is they don't have a pre-shot routine per se. They may have bits and pieces, and it's jumbled, and it's never consistent. This is why, you know, we emphasize as teacher professionals and those that have been in and around the game for any length of time, how important it is to go to the range or the practice tee and practice not only hitting the ball with your different clubs and distances and things like that. But that's where you develop your pre-shot routine. And you work on that and you hone it to a point that you can do it like knowing the hairs on the back of your hand. You want to get it down to really a science and understanding that, because the problem is if you don't have a consistent pre-shot routine, your thoughts and your actions get so mixed up and jumbled, and that's how you lack consistency in playing this game. And Cindy, I know playing in a number of programs over the years, I'm sure you've seen this dozens upon dozens of times. And talk about some of the things that can happen as a result of not having a solid pre-shot routine.
Well, you just aren't sure of what you're doing, and it's happenstance. You know, you're just not going to be consistent. And one of the first things or the biggest requests I get on the lesson team, and I'm sure almost all LPGA, PGA pros and qualified, certified instructors will tell you, is that people come in and say, I just want to be more consistent. Well, okay, define consistent. That would be boring, which would be doing the same thing over and over. Well, if you have no idea what you're doing, how can you do it over and over again? So we need to back out of it and say, okay, let's find a comfortable pre-shot routine that you believe you can do every time you have the opportunity or a challenge to hit a shot. And once you develop that, your brain will say, well, it's about time. Now we've got a little plan here. This is what we're going to do. It's a ritual. Then your brain gets used to that. And then when you become, let's say we get under pressure, then you'll be able to perform because you will have practiced the routine. Yep. So everybody wants to win the club championship or pretend they're playing in the U.S. Open and you have to hit the shot on the last hole, you know, to win the tournament. So we all practice to have the privilege of pressure, but we don't prepare our brain to know what we're doing, so it doesn't matter how much pressure there is. So that,
right,
back out of that, that's one of the reasons that I signed up to be on the Big Break 3, ladies only. When I saw the email, again, it wasn't because I wanted to be on a reality show. I didn't really want to be on a reality show, but I wanted to win a Legends Tour event. And the little voice in my head said, you know, if you were standing on the 18th hole and you had to hit a shot over water with thousands of people watching you and you were leaving the tournament, you'd probably throw up. Oh, good point. Yeah. You're right. Well, you need to go expose your fear so that you can learn how not to be afraid so you can produce a shot when you need to.
Right. And you know, you have to liken it, you know, pre-shot routine, just to sort of, you know, again, further explain a little bit. If you were organizing a filing cabinet and you wanted to know where everything was, you're going to put the files in a certain order so that when you go back each time, you're going to be able to pull out the appropriate file that you need. If you're in a business office or something, or if you're on an assembly line, you know, and you're somebody that you know, puts the engine in the car, well, you're going to put the engine in the same place every time. You're not going to one time put it in the front under the hood and the next time put it in the trunk. So it's a way of organizing your thoughts and preparing yourself for each shot. And when you do it in a consistent manner, as Cindy is suggesting here in this series, it's going to help not only make you a better player, but it's also going to help you in situations, as she's indicated, when you're faced with pressure shots. It's going to help you regroup and collect your thoughts by having that consistent routine. So it's extremely important. We can't emphasize enough that having a solid pre-shot routine is so important to play this game so well, as Cindy has done all of her career, of course. Cindy, let's progress if we can. We've now made the calculations. We've gone through our pre-shot routine, and now we're ready to execute the swing. Let's move into that next.
Well, everybody needs one or two maximum thoughts or feels when they swing the club.
if your brain is not thinking something that you tell it to think, if you're not in control of your mind, it will start talking to you. So the example being, you're standing over a shot and you hear a voice that says, don't hit it in the bunker, or look out for OB. You know, it's like, well, who is this person that's talking to me? And are you the
right
enemy? And again, it would be the protector. So if you don't know what you're doing, that voice will show up. And you can visually see it on the LPGA and the PGA Tour. It comes across as apprehension, doubt, fear. The player will back away because they hear voices.
Yep. And we don't want to allude to the fact and say that they're all crazy, you know, and start everybody getting worried that all of the professional golfers are all nuts or something. But no, that's a great point, because we've all seen this at time to time. You'll see a player step up. He'll have a shot maybe over a lake or something to the 18th green, and suddenly he or she will back away from the shot. And sometimes it can be several times. And that's exactly what you're talking about, right, Cindy?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the one that is, I hate to throw him under the bus, but the one guy that you can absolutely see this in real life is Keegan Bradley. He backs away. He, you know, it's like he's nervous and jerky. Now, it does work for him. God bless him. It works for him. I know Keegan. We've played, you know, my son is very good friends with Keegan. I'm good friends with Pat. I love Pat to death. But I have, you don't want to be in that head. I don't want to be in that head. I've been in that head, and I don't want to be there. It's like there's doubt and insecurity, or back off and just make sure. I mean, you can almost hear it going on if you watch him. Sergio used to be the same way. And I mean, Alan has said, wow, it looks like something has come over and possessed your body, Cindy. And it's absolutely the truth. So you don't want that to happen. So what do you want to happen if you play little games with yourself and you say, okay, how am I going to develop my pre-shot routine that I'm comfortable with? Then we would go back to what we did the first or second part of this series. Are you audio, visual, or kinesthetic? How do you find a right brain swing thought that makes sense to you that works repeatedly? Well, we can give you a little test that you would have to email me for, which is cindy@cindymillergolf.com. Or I can ask you this. If we had to go someplace that you've never been before and you cannot use GPS, you've never been there, you have no idea where it is, would you like me to tell you how to get there? Would you like to read written directions, or would you like to look at a map? So depending on your answer, it will tell us whether you're audio, visual, or kinesthetic. So if you say to me, I want you to tell me how to get there, you would be an auditory learner. If you say, I want to see a map, you would be a visual learner. And if you say, I want to read written directions, you would be a feel or a kinesthetic learner. So depending on the type learner you are, okay, I happen to be a visual and an auditory learner. I played an instrument for a long time. I love mantras. So my visual is I'm spiked to a pole from my chest, which is a sick visual, but it works for me because I don't want to sway.
Right.
I tend to try to take it back too far because I want to hit it further. And my little Cynthia tries to pound it, and you can't do that. So I'm spiked to a pole so I don't sway. And then I have this little, it's probably a mantra and a feel all in one. I swing it back and I feel like I'm holding a piece of pizza. I let my hip go and I toss underhanded or throw.
Yep.
So those are my swing thoughts when I get ready to hit a shot. I am paying attention to what I'm doing with the task at hand while I'm doing it. The present moment.
Right. Right, and that's again is so important. I think that you know everybody has to sort of, and it's what might work for you may not necessarily work for somebody else. So you have to sort of have your own, and again, as you indicated earlier on, you know, you just maybe one or two. You don't want to get you know with five or ten, you know, different swing thoughts because then you just get so your mind gets so jumbled up and boxed down that then it just becomes impossible to execute a good shot. So just one or two thoughts like you've just done there is really all somebody needs, but it has to be something that they can relate to and that works for them. So, and that's part of, again, building that pre-shoot shot routine and then getting ready to execute the swing. What are some things that Cindy, that you think, again, that a lot of amateurs that you've seen in your experience and even sometimes yourself do when they get to this stage?
Well, they typically appear not to have any process. And they just walk up and hit. And most times, a lot of them don't even look to where they're aiming. So it's so funny to me that they get mad about the results of where the shot goes when they really didn't even aim the club face at the target. Once they walk into the ball, they don't even look up again to be sure that they're aimed at the target. So they could be aimed 50 yards to the right of the target. They hit the ball 50 yards to the right of the target, and they go, oh, you know, and they're upset. But they're not aware that they didn't even look to see where they were going.
Right. Right, exactly. And again, that's something that we can't emphasize enough. This is why it is so important. And we realize that in this day and age, you know, time restraints, you know, can put a restraint on the average person. We don't have as much time maybe to do some of the things that we would like to. But if you truly want to be a better golfer, even if it's just, you know, a weekend warrior, you have to be willing to put some time in. Again, it's going to depending, as Cindy talked about in the first part of the series, you have to decide what type of player you want to be. Whether you want to be just an occasional player or whether you want to be someone that's going to be a little more competitive or you're playing in different corporate or charity events or what have you, you have to decide what it is that you want to, what type of player you want to be. And once you've done that, that's certainly going to dictate the process. But even, you know, for those occasional golfers, I think it's still important, you know, to establish some of the things that we've talked about here in this series, mainly because I think once you start to incorporate some of these things into your game and you become a better player, suddenly you might not want to just play on the weekend. Suddenly now you want to be a little bit more assertive and you want to be a little bit more aggressive and play more frequently. And it becomes a more enjoyable game. And there's just so many things that if you're doing right, this game can be a whole lot of fun. And that's why we want to bring this to you, and Cindy wants to bring this to you in the series. And Cindy, there's some questions that the listeners need to sort of ask themselves, and why don't you walk us through those, and then we'll talk about exposing the fear.
Well, I can tell you that if you invested in 2 one-hour lessons, and you knew what you wanted and said, look, I need to be able to hit the ball straight down the fairway so that I don't embarrass myself in a charity golf event, and I need a plan and a process to do so, I absolutely guarantee you that I could help you do that. And I would bet that 95% of the qualified teaching professionals in the country could help you. So if you said,
yep,
look, I need to develop a process, an appreciate routine that I can be comfortable with and have a little bit of confidence and certainty that I can hit the ball straight down the middle of the fairway. It doesn't have to be far, but it has to be straight, that you could do that in 2 one-hour lessons. And if not, change golf purpose.
Right, right, exactly. And that's part of the process as well. You want to choose somebody, first and foremost, that you're comfortable with, and most importantly, you want somebody that's listening to what it is that you want, and not sort of instilling. And as Cindy indicated, certainly the majority of them out there are there to help you and are going to do that. But you want to make sure that they're listening to your needs and not sort of imposing, you know, a methodology, if you will, of their own doing. So you want to make sure that you choose that well. And if you happen to connect with somebody and it's not working, then you have options. There are many, many great professionals out there, both on the LPGA and PGA and other certifications that are out there as well. So choose wisely. And but Cindy, let's talk about some of the parts of exposing the fear. And you've got down here, when apprehension appears, doubt creeps in. With doubt comes uncertainty. With uncertainty comes fear. With fear comes lack of commitment. And with lack of commitment comes a bad swing. And, of course, with a bad swing comes a bad shot. If you're not aware of the doubt and learn to stop and handle it, and continued improvement is almost impossible. So what do we do to sort of expose the fear? What do we do to nobody, even the top professionals, don't completely overcome it, but there are little things that they do to help handle that better. Talk about that if you can.
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to be willing to look in the mirror. And you have to say, you know, why do I do what I do? You have to answer the question, why? Why does the ball go where it goes? Well, do you have enough skill to know how far you hit the ball? So that would come back to, I have to invest time in practicing and learning how to play. Because, again, it depends on your level, and I don't want to lump everybody in one big pile here, because that's certainly not our mission here. But you have to stop and say, well, why am I not getting what I'm getting? Or what I want to get. I keep missing shots. For example, this tournament I played in Phoenix. You know, I played terrible the first day, and I really felt like I was swinging pretty good. You'll hear that from guys. You'll hear that from PGA and LPGA Tour players. You know, how you playing? Well, I feel like I'm close. You know, I'm really working on my game,
right,
and I feel like I'm close, but I'm just not getting the results. Well, they are very aware of what they're working on. So you have to invest and look in the mirror and say, what is it that I want to do? What do I want to accomplish? And why am I not getting it? So that goes back to when you go for a lesson, the first thing you ask somebody is, why are you here? Well, I want to fix my – I keep looking up. Well, no, that's what you think you're doing. You know, that's because your committee of they has been telling you look up. What do you want to do with the ball? Well, I come over the top. No, tell me what you want the ball to do. Because, see, they don't even know that they can control the club that controls the ball. So it really
right.
goes back to the why. So if you're not sure what you want to do, you cannot be in control of what you're doing. So let's
right.
just pretend that you really don't work on your game. You know, again, some people think that they hit their 9-iron 150 yards. Not really. You know, you're probably trapping the ball and or you're coming over the top or you're sculling it or hitting it thin. Not many
yep.
players hit a 9-iron in the air the way it's supposed to be hit, clean, and fly at 150.
Yep.
You know. So are you in denial? You know, that's the other question. So it all comes back to having the courage to look in the mirror to really find the answers. And if you're willing to do that, then improvement is definitely possible.
Yeah, you know, you have to really make that decision to sort of seek the challenge, if you will, of becoming a better player. And, you know, even some of the best players, and I was thinking when you were talking there about what you had said about even, you know, some of the top players, you know, not quite being there. And I remember famously when Tiger Woods, you know, first came on the tour and, you know, he'd won a few tournaments in that. And there'd be moments when he'd be interviewed by the press and he would say something like, well, he shot a 68, we'll say as an example. And he said, well, I didn't have my A game. And everybody, you know, would be sort of looking at themselves. What are you talking about? You just shot a 68 or a 67, or, you know, or something like that. What do you mean you didn't shoot your A game? But in his mind, exactly what you were talking about, he knew what he was working on. He knew what he needed to do. And if he wasn't quite doing it, that wasn't where, you know, he wasn't quite where he needed to be. He still had a great, you know, a great day by most standards. In fact, a phenomenal day. But in his mind, he wasn't, because there were certain things that he was working on and he wasn't quite there yet. So that's what really, you know, we're talking about. But Cindy, there's things I think that everybody needs to, you know, once they've looked in the mirror and they've sort of done that assessment, really need to work on. If we could sort of summarize just over these last few weeks, just to bring everybody up to date, some things very quickly. What do we need to do as an amateur? What do the amateurs need to do in order to truly own their game? Just some quick steps.
Well, I think first of all, you have to say, why am I playing? If you're only playing for fun or recreationally or socially with your family and your kids, then lower your expectations a little bit. You know, don't have this, well, I should be able to do this. No, you really shouldn't, because playing the game of golf at a high level takes so much work and investment, and there's pain involved in it. I mean,
yep.
There is crying in golf, let me tell you. And so if you only want to do it for fun, then lower your expectations. Maybe when you go out and play, if you can't hit it in the air, use a tee. Again, let's just have some fun playing golf and being outside and enjoying the time with your family. Now, on the next step, if you're going to play and you want to play in a league and you got to get the ball in the air, then you're going to have to invest some time on the range. The number two thing is, you know, who are you? What do you want to do? Do you want to hit the ball in the air? Do you want to hit it straight? Do you want to score better? Find out some goals that you want to work on and invest the time, one at a time, to improve those different skills, if you will. I just want to get the ball in the air. I just want to hit it clean. I don't want to scull it. Or I want to hit it straight. Do you know what a square club face looks like? Number three is, what does it take to improve? So we had Alan on last week. When do you know that you need to look in the mirror and say, okay, enough is enough? I may not want to look in the mirror. I don't want to see all these flaws in my face, but I may need to take the bull by the horns and really get out of denial and face this. And then today is, you know, do you have a pre-shot routine? Do you realize that your left brain and your right brain need to learn to work together? That it's difficult and you have to train. It's mind management and thought control. So those guys and gals on the tour, they make it look really easy, but they have worked at this. Again, you know, I went to a seminar that Lynn Marriott and Pia Nelson did at the U.S. Open a few years ago, and they're going to do it again this year at the Women's U.S. Open. And our assignment was to go out and pick three tour players and time and write down their pre-shot routine and see if they did the same thing on every single shot. And if they did not do the same thing on every shot, tell us what happened. What were the consequences of that? Did they miss the shot or did they hit it better?
Yep.
And invariably, Annika Sorenstam was the same time every single shot, and when she looked up one extra time on a putt that she normally didn't do, she missed the putt. So this is so scientifically planned, you know, and they make it look easy, but they have put in the work. So if you choose to own your game, you really need to say, wow, how much better can I get? Well, we don't know, but let's sure try.
Yep. That's a great way to bring us up to speed. You know, we can't emphasize enough, you know, golf, as so many have said in the past, golf really mimics life in so many ways, because life is about preparing. You know, when we're youngsters, you know, we go to school, we get our education, and we have learning experience along the way to prepare us for later in life. And it's the same thing when you're playing golf. You know, when you're young, you get exposed to the game at some level, some earlier than others, of course, and you get exposed to certain things. And good exposure is certainly going to help make things a little bit easier, and that's why we've talked about getting together with a teacher professional and getting them to help guide you and steer you in the right direction. But really what they're doing is they're not there to tell you what to do. They're really there to unlock and open up the person that's inside and bring the best of you out. And that's what happens in life. And that's why so many people have said over the years that golf mimics life so much. So I want to thank, you know, those of you listening in to Cindy Miller's series here. It's what a great series. And we're going to have more of course, as the weeks go on. But Cindy, fantastic. I really enjoy today's. I liked, as I said, getting into sort of the meat and the potatoes of things. And I know there's some more great stuff. So great job on putting this series together.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's really fun. I've experienced it myself. That's why I'm able to share, because there is crying in golf, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, we've all done it, that's for sure. Cindy, we've got a few minutes left here, and as we talked about in the beginning, and I'd mentioned you had participated in a tournament this past weekend, the Jim Kelly, Celebrity Classic, which he uses, of course, to benefit his foundation, the Kelly for Kids. And let me just, for those of you that I'm sure most of you know who Jim Kelly is, of course, Jim is retired from American football right now, but he was a quarterback in the NFL for the Buffalo Bills for a number of years. Of course, he's a Hall of Famer, and he's been running a charity now for a number of years. And let me just read a little bit here about his foundation. Of course, the mission statement for Kelly for Kids is committed to serving disadvantaged and disabled youth in Western New York through distribution of grant money and raised throughout the year. And the foundation, of course, after he retired, former quarterback of Buffalo Bills and Pro Football Hall of Famer, Jim Kelly decided to make Buffalo, New York a more permanent home. And when he arrived back in 86, he was not only focused on building a winning football team, which, of course, he was very successful during his tenure, but he was also determined to make a difference in the community, as he did by establishing the Kelly for Kids Foundation. What a great foundation that is. And you have, of course, you know Jim Kelly, and you participated in his tournament for a while now. Tell us a little bit about that and just how passionate he is as a person.
Well, Jim and I both went to the University of Miami, so we're both Hurricanes, which I think, you know, was the beginning of our friendship. But I must tell you that he has given back to the community so much in his Kelly for Kids Foundation. His son, Hunter, was born, and I'm not even sure what the name of the disease was, but he has gone through so many challenges, and his lovely wife, Jill, who's done so much work to help children around the country. They have this tournament every year. It was the 28th annual. And I must
right.
tell you, it's the craziest, biggest party I've ever been to in my life. And the first time I played in the tournament, I was like, what is this? They have tents. I think there's 5 tents around the golf course. There's local radio stations that blast music so loud. There's golf carts all decorated. There's mimes. There's drinking. The first time I was there, there was throw the football and knock Dan Marino in the water. So, you know, Chris Berman is there, Dan Marino, Joe DeLaMalier, who else? Reuben Brown, C.J. Spiller, a bunch of Bills. Who's the new Bills kid? I should know this. Marv Levy, Bill Polian, who used to be the general manager of the Bills. I mean, it was just absolutely a celebrity fest, and I was the token chick. I was the only woman celebrity playing in the tournament. They auction off all these stars. It's just so much fun, and they raise thousands and thousands of dollars for Kelly for Kids Foundation. And then they give the money out to charity all over Buffalo. It's not just for Jim Foundation. They give the money all over. And so it's just a great thing he does. And on a side note, Jim is battling a reoccurrence of his mouth cancer, and he just finished his last radiation treatment this past week. So Jim Kelly definitely needs our prayers.
Yeah, for sure. He has done I'm just reading through here a little bit, and his foundation, of course, is distributed close to $4 million since its inception to many local charities, children's charities, just to name a few, Cradle Beach Camp, Kids Escaping Drugs, and of course, and Jim's son's foundation, Hunter's Hope, just to name a few. But we certainly want to keep Jim Kelly in our thoughts and prayers, and we want to wish him well and a speedy recovery through this. I know it's a difficult battle, but we know that he's a champion, and we'll make it through. So we'll certainly keep him in our thoughts and prayers. And Cindy, I just think it's so great when celebrities like this give back to the community. And golf is really, it's not only a great business tool, as you and I know, but it's just a great way to really give back. And it transcends so many different areas of life. You know, you see a lot of football players, you see a lot of basketball players now, baseball players, all use golf in some fashion to give back, you know, despite their respective sports. And this is why being part of a golf community is just so much fun and enjoyment. It's a game, of course. It can be very competitive at times, but mainly it's there to have fun and enjoyment. And, yeah, it can be a little frustrating, as we both know, but that's part of the fun as well. So, Cindy, do you have some closing thoughts on or maybe a sneak peek at what we're going to have next week for the next part of the series?
Well, I think next week we're going to do trusting yourself. I think you need to learn to trust yourself. And I may see if I can get a couple of my stars to be on from my Legends
tour. That would be fantastic.
So, yeah, keep your fingers crossed. I'm not going to mention any names, but we're going to see who we can get. And back to the professional athletes who raise money for great causes. It's amazing because some of these people really don't play golf very well, but they realize the impact that it can make and the relationships that this game builds. And again, you know, Danny Gare was just there yesterday from the Sabres, and Andre Reed, who's going to be inducted in the Football Hall of Fame. They've both got a charity golf tournament. Cindy, can you come play? And the NFL alumni is going to have a big tournament at Hickory Stick in Niagara Falls. So, you know, a lot of these guys can't break 120, but they realize the benefits of using the game of golf as a tool to help raise money, build relationships, and really help people in need, which is they need to be commended for that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, to put it quite bluntly, I know I've watched some of these players over the years as they've transcended into golf, and quite frankly, some of them actually suck when it comes to golf. But they've got big hearts, let's call a spade a spade. I mean, some of them couldn't hit the broadside of a barn door with that golf ball, but they've got big hearts, and they certainly have a zest and love, and there's still a lot of that competitive juice going, and I think they have more fun ribbing one another and getting the better of each other, you know, than worrying about where the ball necessarily goes. So it's a fun game. There's a lot of great things, and we're certainly going to bring more about some of the different tournaments and that go out throughout the country. I think it's important. I think we're going to make that maybe a semi-regular part of the show here as well, as talk about some of the great charity events that are going on there and help bring some attention there. But Cindy, I want to thank you for bringing a great part to the series. I enjoyed that myself, and I always like to feel I learn a little bit here as well. But we've got to close up the show, so Cindy and I, of course, want to take this opportunity to thank all of the listeners from all over the place for tuning in every week to the Women of Golf show, and we look forward to having you join us each and every Tuesday right here on Blog Talk Radio at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as I said, remember, if you want to contact Cindy, you can contact her directly at cindy@cindymillergolf.com, or you can email into the show here at womenofgolf@gmail.com. And don't forget, Cindy's got a world of knowledge, and if you want to work with Cindy, and you can get her at her email at cindy@cindymillergolf.com. And I know that she'd be more than happy to help you with your game, and particularly how to own your game. So make sure that you do that. And we look forward to seeing you next week right here on the Women of Golf. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you so much. Have a great week.
All right. You have a great week. All right. Take care, everybody.